Okay, new book, Ecclesiastes. Haven't done that. I checked my list. Checked it twice to see if you were naughty or nice. And some of you were naughty. Okie dokie, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you help us now as we approach this Holy Bible that you'd help us to understand it, help us to know how to apply, help us to study it in context, help us to know what is said, and help us recognize the lessons that it's teaching. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, this is a perfect sermon. Not the one I'm going to give, okay, this book here, okay, it's got 12 chapters, and this is a, Avian, she's not hearing me back there, okay, so it's a written sermon, like you get out of the Sword of the Lord, or the Flaming Torch, or all these other places, okay, whether he preached it verbally, probably so, did you get it? Do we have contact? Okay, contact. Okay, so the word preacher, you'll see in the first verse, the words of the preacher. The word preacher is found 7 times in the sermon. Okay, and this is the Bible method of what the schools, the seminaries, the Christian colleges call homiletics. The Catholic priest, he will give a homily. Now, we Baptists, we don't want to call it a homily, okay? But that's what they call a homily, and that's the shorter version of homiletics, and homiletics is the art of preaching, okay? And it'll usually be a whole class you got to take in school, you know, in these schools, and then you have to preach 2 or 3 times with these guys, okay? And so it's the art of preaching. Now, we have the course in the Bible. What is a perfect sermon? We've got the sermon. It's got 12 chapters. A sermon has an introduction. It has a theme. It has the main body, and it has a conclusion. You can forget the poem at the end, okay, because there's no poem at the end of this one. Okay, you'll see he draws a conclusion at chapter 12, verse 13. Let us hear that conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is a whole duty, and so forth. So it has an introduction, it has a theme, a sermon, it has a theme throughout this sermon where you're trying to draw people to a conclusion to make a decision. That's what preaching is. Okay, now, some guys think that preaching is yelling. You ever hear a guy like that where he reads the Bible, normal voice, or some of them, as soon as they open a Bible, they get this different voice. When your Bible too, and the Bible says it, and here we go, and you're running down a choo-choo track, okay? And that's not preaching. Preaching is not yelling. That's the Hiles Anderson method. They think that you've got to yell to be preaching, okay? It's like the pastor up there, Jack Scott. You know, I think the guy has a great speaking voice. He's got a very soothing, excellent, normal speaking voice. When he yells because he thinks he's supposed to yell to preach, he sounds like a woman. I mean, the voice goes octave up, and his voice is not conducive for yelling. It is a great voice. It's a great radio voice. I'm not saying he's got the face for radio, but okay. But to me, when he at least that's the way I remember him preaching is when he would raise his voice because he thinks. That's fundamentalism preaching. You've got to yell and scream sometime in a sermon. Then when you do that, it would take him out of his nice-sounding voice when he just talks naturally. Okay, and so preaching, it can include yelling, but it doesn't have to. A lot of people think you have to. Okay, so preaching is basically taking a subject, giving an organized subject to somebody, a theme, and trying to draw them to a conclusion to make a decision. That's what preaching is, Okay, you can see the theme of his sermon in verse 2, and it will follow this theme through the whole sermon. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That's his theme. He's going to hit about 10 areas where he deals with things that are vain. This sermon is a perfect sermon for Americans because he hits on everything that Americans think what you got to have to live the high life. You know, I'm drinking a Bud. Am I here living the high life? You know, that stuff, okay? Or I've got a bunch of cars or, you know, wine, women, so am I living the high life? Okay, that's what Ecclesiastes is about. Now, Solomon has the credentials to show any American that if you want to live the way he lived, all the money he's got coming in, where the media or the everybody thinks got to be wine, women, and song. He had it all as far as the world, the hedonists say that's supposed to make you happy, and he said, it's all vain. That's what he said, it's all vain. Okay, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Okay, he will show you that Hugh Hefner's wrong, the Playboy crowd. He will show you that all, you know, the Bill Gates crowd are absolutely wrong. And so Solomon shows in this sermon that what they teach at all the state colleges, education does not provide happiness, money does not provide happiness. All the philosophy, the educated humanist and the materialistic hedonist are trying to live the way Solomon lived, and he's already told them it's all vain. Every bit of it's vain. Now, this is a book you need to realize that we need to keep things in context. This book, you got 12 chapters. The theme of this book is looking at life from under the sun. Okay, you'll find that phrase occurs under the sun around 29 times. So you're dealing with that phrase twice, at least twice, per chapter. So if somebody is going to limit themselves, Solomon, most of the time in this sermon, limited himself to looking at life from under the sun. On occasion, he'll mention God, looking at God above the sun. On occasion, he'll mention that. But the vast majority of the sermon is looking at life the exact way that all Hollywood actors look at it. Life under the sun. The way politicians look at it. The way the ones at the state schools look at it. Life under the sun. I came from an animal. I'm going to live like an animal. I'm going to die like an animal, but I'm going to live it up while I'm alive. Okay, and that's basically what Solomon is showing. Okay, now, if you look at the title of the book, it's interesting why God did something like this. Shows God does have a sense of humor. Okay, if you drop the last four letters, put your thumb over the last four letters, does anyone know what that word be in the Greek language? Maybe you've heard that before. Ekklesia. Anybody remember hearing a preacher talk about ekklesia? Mr. Greek guy. Called out assembly. Okay, ekla, exit. Okay, exit. That's a Greek word. Here, God took a Greek word, put it in the title of a book in the Old Testament, which was originally written in Hebrew. And he gives you that this preacher is preaching a sermon to the assembly. Look in chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 11. Okay, again, the theme throughout this sermon is vanity of vanities. You'll see that chapter 12, verse 8. And then you'll see the word preacher, one of the seven times. Verse 9, the word preacher, another one of the seven. Verse 10, the word preacher. And then verse 11, the words of the wise are as goads, as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies. Masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further, by these my son be admonished of making many books, there is no end. A preacher's job is to major in studying books. Verse 12, that's his number one job, is to study. Okay, and he delivers his sermon. It's called a delivery, like a woman gives birth to a baby. She delivers a baby, and that's what it's like giving a sermon. If you doubt that, try to write one up. And you'll see the headache and the pain and the turmoils and all this stuff. What was it? That one play we did, was it not Regina? Remember Regina, remember she lived in preacher's home, and on Saturday nights it was like hell in the home because he was trying to get a sermon for the next day, and the guy didn't know God, so he couldn't get a sermon, and so he didn't know what to do for the next day, and so every Saturday night was just terrible, and she remembered that, okay? And if a guy doesn't get if you don't get your messages from God, it is a bad thing. I mean, you look at this book, 30,000 verses, there's got to be something here. There's got to be something. And if you don't get it from God, boy, it just ain't coming. This is why the average preacher stays in a church less than 2 years. Heard a guy in Walden, Colorado. He started a church there, was there for 6 months. He was in a church there for 6 months, and he said he taught him everything he knows at the Bible and left. And the funny thing is, that's probably all he knew. But you see, when you got an eternal book, you have eternal material. It's just a matter of praying and asking God to give it. And I have watched for years that God answers that prayer all the time. God, what do I preach? What do I preach? What are you going to give me? What are you going to give me? And even the times when I feel like, man, that was a dud. You know, walk out there, that was a dud. Somebody often usually says, you know, a couple weeks ago, boy, that sermon you preached, boy, that was such a blood. Which one was that? About 2-3 weeks ago. Oh, it's a dud? You know, and so you get wondering like that. But it's been amazing to me how for years I've watched God give this little pea brain the exact message that's often needed. And oftentimes, it'd be a reinforcement of what Felipe gave in Sunday school. And we don't make connections on those things at all. Okay, and so it's just phenomenal to me how God can do that. Probably the most phenomenal thing to me is that he can get into this thick skull, this Dutch stubborn head. That's the amazing thing about how God can do that. Okay, so Ecclesiastes, okay, this is a preacher delivering a sermon to an assembly, and his theme is the vanity of life under the sun. And his conclusion is inviting the listener to fulfill his proper duty in life, and that is to fear God and keep his commandments. So the vast majority of this sermon is dealing with events under the sun. On occasion, he will mention God. It is a dangerous book to hang your head on for doctrine, especially for New Testament believers, because this sermon is written by a man who is living under the Old Testament doctrine of the Mosaic Law, supposedly one of the wisest, if not the wisest, but I kind of question that with all the wives that he got. Okay, and I think he lost some things in that process. And what he is doing is he's analyzing, he is stepping out of himself. Not literally. He is stepping back and looking at his life. Have you ever done that? A lot of people can't honestly do that. To step back and look at what's taken place. And he's like getting drunk one night and he's analyzing it. How am I feeling? Why do I want to do this? I got this buzz. Why do I feel this buzz? What does it do for me? Why is that guy laughing over there? He's holding a can. The music's loud. What's so fun about that? He's analyzing it. Okay? He's going to the amusement park or going up the roller coaster, up and down. Oh, I got a tingle in my belly. What's the big deal about that? Why do people get all excited about that? Spend all that money to go up and down on a roller thing. And what am I? Is that accomplishing anything? Okay, that's what he's doing. He's analyzing things. Okay, and a lot of people don't do that. Dieter was telling me, Dieter Marklin, you know, he graduated from Purdue, and he says while he was going through Purdue, he was a typical kid going through Purdue, and he said there were nights when he'd come home drunk, and he said after he'd kind of recovered from that, he'd sit there and think about that. Is this all to life? So you get a lonely feeling. And you know there's a lot of people like that? A lot of those kids down there, the ones I notice are the ones that are walking by themselves, wondering what they're thinking. When they're walking in a gang, somebody's got to show off to somebody else. But the guy walking by himself or the girl walking by themselves, and if they're in deep thought, you kind of look at them and you wonder, what are they thinking? Are they analyzing this? What's the big deal here? Why is it fun to go into the bar? What is it? The lights are down low, the music blaring. What's the big deal about all that excitement? That's what Solomon's doing. Okay? And he says it's all vain. It's all vain. Fame and fortune cannot buy happiness, nor give peace in one's heart. Real purpose and meaning in life is only found by Jesus Christ. You see, and that's what a person needs to do. Sit down and think about it. Okay? And in this book, this book is generally read by the Jews during the Feast of the Tabernacles, which is around this time of year. And this reminded the Jews that material wealth and prosperity should not sidetrack a person from the real purpose in life. And the real purpose is to please God. There are a few subtle hints in here in this sermon about the Great Tribulation. Okay, but generally speaking, he will limit his sermon to life under the sun. Okay, now we can start through the sermon. Chapter 1, verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. The son of David, you could also include the son of Bathsheba. You remember that affair? Okay, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What's vanity? Barack Obama becoming president? It's vain. He's probably at times wishing he hadn't had it. Michelle don't want it. She said, life's been hell. I mean, she ain't met hell yet. It's not what they think it's all about. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Then he says, now the first thing he says, what profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? Okay, look at labor under the sun. You build a building. For what? It's going to fall down someday. I don't care how good you do it. You make a car. Where's it going to end up? Junkyard. Build a house. Someday it's going to be in ruins. Someday down the road. Okay, you do something for somebody. You know, you put their electricity in or, you know, all this other things. What's going to happen down the road? Now, if we use those things for a ministry of God, that's meant you're doing some eternal value there. Okay, whatever job, driving a truck. Back and forth. God forbid hauling liquor around. Okay, you're hauling this product over here. hauling this product over here. What for? For a bunch of heathen to die and go to hell? You see, if we use our vocation like Ephesians 4 says, for the glory of God, man ought to walk worthy of his vocation. Okay, a lot of people live their lives and 99.9% of the world doesn't even know they existed, and they die and they've done nothing any different than any dog, cat, or skunk has done in this county. Okay, and so he said, what profit? Well, he says, provided me food and shelter. Okay, yeah, that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? You know, some of the things the Lord built in his carpenter shop. He helped his dad. I don't know what kind of carpenter they was. They built houses. I wonder how long they lasted. I wonder if the Lord was perfectionist. Building for Joseph. I'll bet he was very precise. Masterful craftsman. But you see, even the things that he would have builded would have passed away. Okay, but you see, that's how he learned subjection, by obeying his earthly father. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? There's that phrase, under the sun. One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh. And usually worse than the preceding one. And each generation progressively worse down the line. I mean, some of the things that young people think is cool nowadays, and not my day, that would have been nerd. We would have brought them and beat the snot out of them. Saw the news report today. Oh, in some, there was an anti-gay. Some boys, you know, said some anti-gay remarks to a 14-year-old kid. So what? That makes the news? What about queers saying something to straights? Does that make the news? Kids do that all the time, no matter what they are. Okay, but one generation passeth away and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. Okay, like I mentioned, that this is a dangerous book to hang around for doctrine. That's a verse Jehovah's Witnesses will hang their hat on to try to tell you that the earth is forever. Okay, and so then they're, if you tell them, you know, you want to go to heaven, you know, oh no, that's all set and sealed. The 144,000 is all set. We're not worried about going to heaven. We're worried about inheriting the earth, because the earth abideth forever. And it's going to go on forever, so we're looking for the new earth, or we're looking for the earth. We're looking forward to kingdom to come, and we're going to be the ones who live on the earth, because the earth abides forever. That's the verse they use. Well, is the Spirit of God giving you any verses that might counteract that one? Somebody throw a verse out? Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. That's repeated Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So we got 3-1. Is this a contradiction? One says heaven and earth shall pass away. Hebrews chapter 1 mentions that the earth fadeth away. It's a quotation from Psalm 102, verse 25 and 26. The earth is going to fold up like people fold up a garment and put it away. Where does the earth get exploded in our Bible? Revelation 20, it explodes. 2 Peter chapter 3, it explodes, it dissolves. I read that one time to a Jehovah's Witness very slowly. Because you say, oh, that's burning up the people. I said, no, it says the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Well, that's the people. I said, elements. He was wanting the earth to live forever. See, Ecclesiastes is like a cross-reference of that, which you can help, you know, if you're dealing with a Jehovah's Witness and you want to really hang his hat, if you really want the guy to jump in a deceptive puddle that he wants, where is it? Genesis 49, do I have a cross-reference here? Genesis 49, 26. You say, you mean you'd help the guy deceive himself? Sure. Sure, no problem. Give him the sword, let him cut himself with it. Genesis 49, verse 26 mentions the everlasting hills. The blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of thy progenitors unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. Let him show him that one. He wants the earth abide forever. Then you can show him Exodus 21, where it says that when a man's a slave, he's a slave forever. Exodus 21, verse 6, and he shall serve him forever. That's a slave and a master. Show him that one. Let him hang his hat on that one for a while. No, when you look at life from under the sun, it appears, it looks like the earth abides forever. So much so that the evolutionists say it's a billion years old. Okay, and so we say this a lot of times, man, I stood in line forever. Okay, and sometimes the Bible will use that, okay, as far as regular speech goes. So, the earth abides forever, that's what it looks like from life under the sun. And that's how the author is saying this. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down. And hasteth to his place where he arose. Now, a person who's scientific will say the sun doesn't rise. The earth rotates. But then they'll read the morning newspaper and it said the sun rise at 6:15. And the sun set. Okay? And then you got your, geocentricity. Where they'll argue with you that the earth is actually stationary and the sun rotates around the earth because Joshua said, sun stand still. He didn't say earth stop rotating. And so they'll use that for a while. And, you know, I've looked at some of that stuff, but I just can't get into that stuff. I just really don't care about it. I mean, okay, at the right, what's it going to change? You know, I'm going to go soul winning. Hey, do you know the earth really doesn't rotate? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But there's some that really swear to that. So in this context, you can see he's using just normal speech down here. Man, that was forever. The sun rose, sunset. Verse 6, the wind goeth toward the south and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. And you can see this, the seasons are changing. The trees are beautiful this time of year. You see, and it won't be long, and all the leaves be gone. Everything looked dead through the winter months, and everybody be cold, then here comes spring, and then back to summer, and then all constantly going round and round. Here we go. Okay, and a guy runs through all those for many, many years, and if you don't know the Lord Jesus Christ, you're going to put him in a box in the ground. Okay, and so it's very important to look at life from above the sun. Verse 7, all the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. So you got evaporation and everything. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. All things are full of labor. That's one thing that's been mentioned to me several times about building a log house. You know, you're cutting the trees, you peel the bark. A lot of labor. I say, yeah, everything's a lot of labor. If you buy the 2x4s, you're buying someone's labor. Someone had to cut that. Okay, you say, well, a machine did. Yeah, but they still had to buy the labor. Somebody had to design that. Labor everywhere. You just don't get away from it. Okay, and everything is full of labor. Time. Okay, all things are full of labor. And that labor is usually a man of his own free accord. That labor is not promoted by government. Government doesn't produce that labor. Even the labor that is produced by government is done by a person, a motivated person, somewhere along the line. It's a free man that will produce labor and he will produce it efficiently. It's government that steals from that free man's labor and takes their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And that's what every country you got to deal with. Every single country. Every single nation has somebody at the top trying to figure out ways to steal from the productive man at the bottom. Whether you call it communism, Nazism, fascism, republic, democracy, oligarchy, monarchy, the ones running government are non-productive, trying to take from the productive. And the productive are doing all they can to try to keep as much as they can without getting shot at or being thrown in jail. You see, and that's what life's all about. You see, and in some countries, they take it from them immediately. They're instant slaves, like in China. In America, they do it more in deceptive means. But all things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. And that's the thing in life, is eye is not satisfied with seeing, is everything becomes commonplace to us all. Everything does. When I first moved to Colorado Springs and moving from the flatlands, going to those mountains, I told myself, man, never get used to those mountains. Always amazed with those mountains. And it wasn't 9 months and I forgot to look at the mountains. Took them for granted. You know, and then once in a while we take a trip and go into the mountains and enjoy the time in the mountains. But you get used to it. And that's the way life is. You see? And a lot of people a lot of preachers, you know, they're in a church for a couple of years and people have gotten used to them. The people, you know, they hear the joke 3 or 4 times and they yawn. People sleeping, nodding on them. Hey, that's just life. That's just the way it goes. It's like, you know, people are more excited to go out to eat rather than eating at home. And how's mama feel? We're going to go out to eat, kids. Yippee! You know, and mom is happy too because she don't have to make it. Okay, but we think, okay, you go to some of these places, man, a lot better at home than eating this stuff. You see? But we just get used to people. Everything gets commonplace. You're used to your car the first time you got it, man, you treated it real good, at least for a week. Okay, and then it got commonplace. That bicycle you got as a kid, man, that thing was your pride and joy for at least a month. Then he left it out in the rain. That baseball glove. You see, that's just the way we are. You get used to things. You get used to people. You take them for granted. You forget about things. Okay, when you first heard of Bible-believing preaching and compared to the other stuff, you go, whoa, man, I haven't heard that before. Whoa, man, I like that. And then it wasn't about 4 months, you know. Ooh. You know, Michael Jordan, when he was playing basketball, he scored, you know, 30 points a game, people, the average player, oh man, that's a good night for him. That's the way it should be. People just take it for granted. Okay, and that's how it is. The eyes are never satisfied. And the ear. You see, the ear, nor the ear filled with hearing. What a person has to do is you got to stop and analyze, stop and think. You know, a young guy, a young preacher wants to get a church. Oh, he's excited about getting a church. And he's ready to get a church. And boy, he's fired up about preaching. And boy, he'll preach his heart out that first couple Sundays a month and 2 months and 3 months. Man, he'll prepare and preach away. And he'll be excited about it. And about a year, it's starting to get dull to him. And, you know, 10 people show up. And he's really getting to wonder about this. And then he'll take a walk someplace and think about it. And say, what's the big deal? And then he'll try to stay awake himself. You know, 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock are my toughest times. 6 o'clock, man, Brother Delmer's leading the singing, and I'm behind him yawning and trying to stay awake. And I've actually caught myself yawning trying to preach. I never thought that would happen. Falling asleep at my own preaching.